is chilling. What more can I say? Top villain.
What up, everybody? This your boy Bill Bellamy, and you are watching and listening to number one podcast for the culture, the movement, and the discussion. This is Top Villain. We are here today with none other than NBA champion, sports analyst, podcaster, media hustler. He does it all. He's an activist, he's a father, and he's a great friend of the game. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the 6'8", 6'8", Matt Barnes in the building.
What? I appreciate you, man. I'm glad we finally locked this in, man.
And yo, it's hard, man. I had to talk to your people. Yeah. I'm up here like... because I know you on so many different levels. I was like, yo, is he picking up the boys today? Maybe I'll ask him here today.
It's just hard right now because it's the season, so I'm traveling a lot for the Kings, and then I'm traveling for all the smoke, too, and then I'm traveling. I just got back from Vegas coaching the Twins, so I'm like, I'm constantly – basketball season is still really busy for me. Like, the summertime is a little bit more chill for me, just like when I play. So you just got to, you know, keep the same groove on.
Yeah, I love what you're doing, Matt, man. I've been watching your career. I have known you literally your basketball career.
Yep.
And it is amazing how you have evolved. And I wanted, that's what I wanted to, this interview to like really, really, really give you your flowers because, you know, coming out of UCLA, going to the league, you know, getting your footing, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, bouncing around, getting it, come to the Lakers, the Clippers, like you've been around. How did you find your groove in the NBA? It seems such a hard vibe to catch.
Just grind, man. Just hoop. And I felt like the NBA was just an audition for what was next in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately enough, I was able to play 15 years, make some good money, won a championship with the Warriors, met some great people. But I felt like basketball was a great way to – I was always looking ahead, like what was next.
What's
although
next?
I was still trying to focus on my job at the time, I was just like, you know, I'm playing on these different teams. I'm meeting all these people in the front row because I know these are the business owners. These are the CEOs. Their kids love our team. So I'm politicking at the same time. So that was just kind of my to answer your question, when I really felt like I found my footing in the league was the 07 season. So I came in the league in 02, 03, and I feel like I didn't really find my footing until I got a chance to go play in Golden State the first time around. And you know, I finally had a coach believe in me, give me some real minutes. And I was kind of able to show what I can do. And from there, I kind of understood, okay, I like to score, but that's not going to be my role in this league. If I want to be, if I want to make this a career, I'm going to have to fight what my role is. And my role was defense, physicality.
Oh, my God.
Dust up if we need to dust up.
Oh, man. And, you always was for the shits, Matt.
And knock down some shots when needed. So that's kind of when started finding my fit.
I know, but the thing about it, though, especially in a scoring-driven NBA league, the old-school throwback guys that are the tough guy, the guy that's willing to take the charge, the guy that's, you know, on the ground for the extra possession, those guys are very few in between, you know what I mean? Like, my eras of the Oakleys of the world, Xavier McDaniels, you know what I mean? Cats that was just rugged-ass cats. It might not always been in the stats the way it is now, but they really help people win.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing. Like a guy like Jamal Crawford, who's another guy that I love to death, you know, found the groove as a sixth man. Like everybody don't get to be Kobe and, you know, Dame Lillard and cats who get the ball every second. Yeah. They know they're getting 30 possessions.
Yeah, and that was my thing because my look didn't really fit the grinder or the enforcer or the hustler. You know what I mean? So I really had to kind of earn that respect too, because you know I came in 6'8", light skin, good hair, tattoos, and like
pretty boy. Like how pretty boy gonna be tough?
Like, what's up with this dude?
You right.
Know what I mean, so early on, it was just, you know, I tried to keep it basketball. Sometimes it got funky, but you know, you kind of had to earn that respect, and I had no problem with that. I, you know, my background is tough. You know, I grew up, you know, with, you know, two parents that I say were functioning drug addicts. You know, we never went without. We were always fed. We were always bathed. We did our schoolwork. We had a roof over our head, but it was rough at times, from food stamps to my dad out in the streets hustling. You know, mom trying to be mom and dad at times. So one thing my dad always taught me, though, is your family is everything. So, you know, I have a younger brother and a younger sister, and if they fight, you fight. No matter what the fuck is,
we fight.
Or you getting your ass whooped. So exactly. it was always a fight, and it was always a fight with me. And it started at a young age, and I kind of just carried that ideal and that mantra to the NBA. Like, if you're my teammate, you're my family. You know what I mean? So it was always, if you look back at the shit I was in the league, it was never one-on-one me. It was always me coming to defense probably my star or my teammate. So, again, that was just kind of my role. I found my role. I was able to play 15 years. I retired the first year into a three-year deal, so I actually got paid for playing 17 years but only played 15 years. So I just kind of found my role. And Doc Rivers was, you know, had a great quote one time. He said, be a star in your role. You know, Chris Paul was the star of our team. Blake was the star of our team. But you could be a star in your role. And that shit, I just took that shit to heart. Not only in basketball, everything. But life.
In life. Be a star in your role. Yep. Be a master of your lane.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Because there ain't no traffic. I mean, you
ain't
see
no
LA.
Ain't no traffic for
ain't
me.
No traffic in that lane. Yeah. Ain't no traffic in that lane.
There is no traffic for Bill Bellamy. And there's definitely no traffic for Matt Barnes. When I look at you now, man, your evolution to me is really inspirational because there's no ceilings on you, right? From the growth as an athlete to now, you know, owning your businesses and being a star and really good at what you do. Like, I remember first seeing you on ESPN and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm seeing Matt about to jump over here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, after two episodes or 2 days, I'm like, Matt, nice. Next thing I know, Matt ain't going nowhere. How did you get into the ESPN job?
I lucked up, to be honest with you. Anything in the media space wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do. You know, I was a huge cannabis advocate. So, you know, once I retired, I wanted to really kind of be the shield for players in the league because, you know, playing that long, I smoked high school, college, league, and it was always a risk. I could have got suspended. I got fined plenty of times. But I just thought, it's just like, man, they're pumping us full of this bullshit but want to penalize us for something that is beneficial, keeps our ass in the house, keeps us cooling out, helps us recover. So that was my first mission when I retired was, you know, myself and my brother Al Harrington, you know, we were taking trips to New York, talking to the NBA, talking to the NBPA, just letting them know, like, you know, there's medical research out here now behind, you know, this plant that you guys are deeming illegal,
unacceptable,
you
guys are deeming,
you know, a gateway, all the old stereotypes that came with it. There's medical research backing it up and showing why it's beneficial. So that was kind of my first plan. Invested in cannabis, you know, was kind of a shield for that. You know, like to think that I was a small part of change, you know what I mean?
Because oh,
we
absolutely.
Were the people that, you know, pressed the line and did that. A friend of mine kept telling me, you know, while I was just kind of figuring out what was next, it's just like, you know, I always wanted to learn how to produce and direct and kind of get behind the scenes and create content, but they're just like, you always were so well-spoken in your interview, you should try sports media. And I was just like, nah, man, my face has been on TV since I was 17. Like, these motherfuckers are tired of seeing me. You know what I mean? Let me get behind. I want to learn behind. They're just like, yeah, you can learn behind, but at the same time, like, just stay fresh because if you keep your face on TV, those doors will continue to stay open. They were open as a player. I'm like, oh, you got a point there. So, when, you know, I started doing Fox and ESPN and
yo, you're so good at it, though, bro.
Yeah, I was getting some solid responses and people really started, you know, giving me positive feedback. I'm like, oh shit. And I, you know, so I took a liking to it, and then it was cool because I was just, you know, learning and when I retired, obviously there was still a lot of my former teammates in the league. So I was just getting, you know, a deeper dive into their games and kind of analyzing their games. And I turned it into a career. So from there, you know, I was doing both Fox and ESPN. ESPN stepped to the plate, offered me a nice deal. So I've been with ESPN for almost the last 3 or 4 years now. Yeah. And through that, you know, people saw that, oh, man, he's not just a thug that likes to fight or a gang. And all these old.
But you a smart thug that liked to fight.
Well, I was educated.
You know,
I had an edumacation, right. You know what I mean? So I just think, my biggest thing post-career was just showing people that side.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I think because you got to see me for 2.5 hours a night, and I might slap someone, I might cuss a ref out, I might get kicked out, and like, oh, he's this, or he's that, or he's just this, he's a punk, he's this. So I think, you know, I obviously credit social media and then, you know, just my ability to get on TV and start talking, and people are like, oh, okay, well, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, because once they see you, they're going to get it, you know, and I got it right away. And the thing that I think works for me as I'm taking myself out, like I don't know you, I'm just looking as a sports fan. Mm-hmm. What I like about what you do is it feels very authentic and you're fair. Like, you know what I mean? Like if somebody say some crazy shit, you correct it.
Yeah.
You know, because you have the back, once again, back to this, you protect the players and you always give this like really inside sort of perspective on what's going on.
Well, I think it's important. You know, I think you, especially for former players, it's tough. And I think that there's certain guys like Stephen A. Smith, and I got a lot of respect for the people that were in the space before that have kind of created their own lane. But I feel like, you know, as a former player, we have a responsibility, one, to a player to kind of really keep it real. Don't go with the old bullshit or the you know, the stuff they try to start. But at the same time, we have to critique because that's our job. So I think you can critique people without disrespecting them. And I think that line has been blurred or even erased now, because now it's who can be the loudest and who could be the most disrespectful and who can get the most views on the dumb shit they say. You know, so I was never really for that. And I think what really also another thing that's kind of helped me continue to move up in this space is my realness and my authenticity. And I will speak my mind and I will have players back, or I will go at another player if they're on some bullshit saying it publicly. You know what I mean? Because it's just like, that's not, don't get caught up in the game with the people who never played. And I have a lot of respect because there's a lot of people that cover our game that are great that never played. But as people who've played, we have a responsibility to our brothers and then also to the fan base of really giving them and letting them know that inside look. You know, I use Stephen A as an example. Great, one of the best in the game, highest paid black man in this space.
Journalist.
But he can't tell you what it's like to shoot a free throw with 2 seconds to go to tie it up to go to overtime. He can't tell you what it's like in the locker room when you're in the finals and you're getting fucked up and the coach is making a crazy speech to kind of, like, he can't tell you the intricacies of the game. So I think as former players, that's kind of where we come in. And to me, if you have enough to talk about, you don't have to disrespect people. So I just think there's just way too much disrespect in the game right now. And I think that, you know, I've been able to stay authentic and true to my lane. And it, I've been able to, again, carve out a niche in my lane.
I even, you know what else I respect about you, too, is even when you make a mistake, you don't always get it right.
But
the dopest shit, though, to me, is like you stand on it. You're like, listen, I made a mistake.
Yeah, and plain and simple.
And I apologize.
I was wrong.
Done. You ain't running from it. You jump right on it.
Well, because you know, I mean, even in your space, if someone would talk shit about you, it would be on the front page. Yeah. And then if they were wrong, it would be on the back page, tiny, some bullshit. Like, no, let that wrong statement or maybe even a disrespectful statement. Mm-hmm. If I was wrong about it, to me, it has to be just as loud because the disrespect was loud. So the apology can't be quiet, you know, or the correction can't be quiet. So again, and I take shit for it. I mean, oh, you wishy-washy, you this, and that. You suck it up for the white. I'm like, nah, I'm just keeping it real. Like, I would say this shit whether I'm on TV or if I was just the homie. Like, Bill, my bad. I fucked up. I misspoke on you. I was wrong about that. You know what I mean? And that's how I would move in my regular life. So I moved the same way I would move, obviously, in my regular life on TV. So, and I understand now that everything I say is going to get broken down and dissected and critiqued. So I really have to really understand and know what I'm saying before I talk. But if there is a few times where I'm wrong, I'll be the first one to tell you.
Yeah, that's 100 for me. I mean, I love it, man. I love what you and Stack is doing, man. It's like you guys have such amazing chemistry. Your show is All the Smoke.
All the Smoke, yeah.
All the Smoke is phenomenal.
Thank you.
You get every kind of guest. You guys keep it real. I have a question for you, because since it's All the Smoke, do you really smoke on that show?
So we started off first, no. Like, we came up with a show idea. I created a show and we took it to them and they're just like, oh, you know, we love the show, but I don't think you guys can smoke. You know, this is it's a big production. This is Showtime. You know what I mean? So it's just like, okay, you know, we'll pay our dues, but eventually if we start doing our thing, I'm going to revisit this. So, you know, first year in the space, we come out and we win Sports Podcast of the Year. So I'm like, okay, we got some leverage now. So what's up?
Let's go.
We smoking. And I think the first guest we broke, because obviously if you come to our show before, we're blowing it down, drinking, listening to music, have some food, kick back. We try to create a cool environment. But I think once we kind of had a little bit of hardware behind what we were putting to the world,
correct,
I went back like, you know, let us, you know, continue to do us. It's got to be inch by inch and it'll be strategically. So the first time we smoked on the shows with Snoop, and then when I tell you,
dude, you cannot not smoke with Snoop.
Right, man, we burned it down and now it's normal. So now if we want to do it now, it's just, you know, obviously we wouldn't smoke with a current athlete on the show, but we could smoke with a retired athlete, or, you know, we just released DJ Quick. And at the end of the, you know, towards the end of the episode, we started burning it down with him. And I wish I would have smoked earlier, because that nigga got so much looser and just started telling me different type of stories. So, again, we strategically pick when we smoke. But, yeah, we can smoke now, to answer your question.
So the question I was going to ask you, because I did Mike Tyson's podcast. Oof. and Mike got bites and
Mike's got everything. Mike got mushrooms. Everything.
Yo, Mike got everything. He was like, first of all, you gotta take it easy with the gummies. They're very powerful. Do you wanna go sleep or you wanna be excited?
Yeah. And I help co-host that show sometimes. So I did his show one time back in the day, and he blew me away because this dude smoked like 5 joints in an hour.
Come on, man.
I was like, damn, I thought I smoked my mind. Fucking with Mike. Mike was, but then he would be blowed. So obviously he's kind of found his balance now. But like you said, there are the mic bites with the ear that he bit off of Holyfield. There's mushrooms. There's fruit. There's weed. There's toad. There's anything you want to dive into on Mike's show, you got to be careful because you'll really take that fucking dive and then you'll be gone while you're doing the interview.
I was sitting in my truck for like 25 minutes stuck, like didn't even realize I was in neutral. I was wondering like why am I not
moving?
I was like, I put it in drive. It was in neutral. It was not moving. Man. Hey, so I have a fun question. Since cannabis is definitely your forte, do you think now that we've really dived into the cannabis world that some of it might be a little too strong for the average consumer?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Well, it's a science now. Like back when I used to smoke, there was pretty much, it was the OG or the perp, and that's what I smoked. But now there's just different. To me, it's more of a science now, and now it's all about, if you're a newer smoker, it's how much THC, it's got to be above 30. Like, I'm not that kind of person. Like, I smoke for a buzz or a vibe or a taste. These people smoke to be zombies. Like, I don't want that. Like, I got 6 kids. I got to go be on TV later. Like, I literally smoke every day. So it's got to be something that
light, nice and easy.
Nice and easy, or just yourself. You know what I mean? Like, know how much you can handle and still function. You know what I mean? Like, my routine in the morning literally is I'll wake up 6:30, get the kids ready for school, take them to school, work out, smoke on the way home, study for my show if I'm going on ESPN, and then go do my show. And then
you can have a full day and coach.
That's what I'm saying. Then after the show, I'll smoke on the way home and pick up the kids from school, and then we got homework, then we got practice, and then once we get everything down, I'll smoke to go to sleep. So like, there's different types that I'll smoke during the day. But I'm pretty much smoking throughout the day. But like I said, I know
what
myself.
What would you recommend for me as a rookie, a guy who don't smoke? Like, if I just want to feel like in the pocket.
A hybrid sativa probably I would start with. And it's a little more euphoric, more of a little body high, more of a thoughtful, get your wheels turning. That's when I do most of my thinking is when I'm on that, and I'll, I need to change this. I need to do this for the show, or I'm going to bring this to the show today. So that's when I kind of really try to get in my creative, because these indicas lay you down. They're just so strong. And I've been smoking so long. It's just like there's some stuff I just don't fuck with. Like, I've been smoking since I was 14. I just turned 43 the other day. But there's some shit I'm like, I'm cool, bro. That's too
See,
much
you
for
a
me.
Pro, and you're like, I'm good with that.
Because I know myself. I don't do the dabs. I don't do all that extra fun shit that people like, I'm cool, man. Like, I need to know how I'm going to get there, how fast I'm going to get there, and when I'm going to come down. Like, I can't be up there. I can't be jumping in the ocean with no clothes on, man. Can't do it.
I can tell you a really quick funny story. So when I was hooping, this is way pre-COVID, we used to hoop like 3-4 days a week. The dudes, there's like 6 or 7 dudes would hit it right before we start playing, right? So they get in the car, they standing outside the car right before the little game. They like, yo, man, I always smoke a little something before I go. Man, this get me in there. And then when we start playing, every time you passing the ball, they say, my bad. I said, you right. Because I feel like people who smoke is a beat off.
You got to know yourself. Because I smoke before games. So that's mine's different. Mine is to focus. Mine is to relax. Mine is to like.
Do it make your jumper wetter when you relax?
I'm just in that zone. Right. You know what I mean? I'm in a zone. I'm in a mental space that I know I need to be in. Because, I don't look at it. Obviously, like I said, I want to hit jumpers and all that. But every night, I'm guarding Kobe. I'm guarding LeBron. I'm guarding KD. I'm guarding D-Wade. I'm guarding Melo. I'm guarding Ginobili. I'm guarding Steph. I'm guarding Clay. So my focus and zone is now I'm studying on my phone. I'm looking at their moves. Okay, when he goes 2 dribbles left, what is he going to do? When he goes 1 dribble right, he's going to shot fake me twice. So I got to, So I'm getting locked in on kind of that level. And that really helps me focus. And then by the time the game hits, it's like it's an autopilot.
You in there.
I'm in autopilot,
Hey, man, that's masterful. You never hear it like that. You never hear the inside thoughts of these players who specialize in certain things. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I love basketball as a fan. I've always been, a fan of the game and of my guys that play.
Right.
Guys like yourself who've definitely carved their way. But I feel like this new culture, when I watch sports, there's always that old school, new school thing, like in hip hop, right? Old school, new school. And most recently, we had this Ja Morant situation that really, like, just became a firestorm for him and the Grizzlies. And I was thinking, as bad as it is happened for Ja Morant, unfortunately, and hopefully that works out, it makes Allen Iverson look normal. Like, we was tripping, bro. Like, yo, when Allen Iverson was playing ball, the NBA was losing their mind. He didn't pull no guns.
They changed the dress code because of him. Like, yo, there was rules.
Y'all had to get suited for him. Now, case in point, let's say what was that, 2002?
Early 2000s, yeah.
Early, right?
When I first came in the league, yeah.
First coming in the league. Mm-hmm. Allen Iverson came to the game with a do-rag on, hat to the side, diamonds.
Baggy jeans
low.
5X white tee.
Come on. And he was the antichrist of the NBA. Then cut to 20-some years later, Ja is just, you know, chilling in a strip club with a gun, though. I mean, it's a gun. Yeah. I mean, it was little. It was tiny. It didn't look real. I thought it was a play gun. I didn't even, because I've never seen nobody have a gun that little. What is that, a 13, a 22? What is it?
It was a 6.
It was a 6. It was like you can't even shoot it. It was so little. It was like right here. So all jokes aside, you know, in a situation like now where the culture has changed on so many levels, do you think there's some unfairness now for the new guys?
I love Ja, one of my favorite players, but that was self-inflicted. Like, it wasn't like somebody caught him doing that. Like, he told on himself. You know what I mean? He put the gun up. And to me, I'm all for, if you feel like you need protection, carry it, bro, because we are targets out here. But I was taught you pull a gun to use. You don't pull a gun for likes. You don't pull a gun for comments. You don't pull a gun to dance. Well, if you're an athlete, you don't pull a gun to dance. You know, you may see rappers do shit, but they live by a different rule book. You know what I mean? There's no commissioner to what the fuck they're doing. Like, we got a commissioner, and we got sponsors, endorsements, and fans, and little kids that look up to us. So it's just like, we have to move
different,
a little different. So what I say it's unfair, I say it's unfair now because you really have to watch yourself. Like, if there was cameras early on, even when I was at UCLA, if they would have caught how hard we were going or the kind of shit we were doing, it would have been a different outcome for a lot of us.
Correct.
But now that you do have to be aware that, you know, everywhere you go from the second you step out of your house, sometimes in your house, if you got the wrong company, you can be filmed. So I just think with Ja's whole thing, and then the world's been telling what he needs to, I just hope he understands his importance in this space. I mean, this
Absolutely.
Is a space
that... We definitely
that
need him.
He's 23 years old. He's going to be one of the faces, because I believe he's going to get the help he needs. He's going to come back stronger and better, and that's going to be trouble for the league. But, you know, this is a young league where, you know, tell me, name 5 American NBA superstars under 25. It's hard to do. It's a lot of European guys. So for the American-born players, it's like Ja, Jason Tatum. I mean, there's a handful of guys. I don't, you know, De'Aaron Fox. There's a bunch of different guys. But at 23, we had a little bit of bread in our pocket, but we didn't have $200 million.
No, not $200
million. We didn't have our
signature. And we didn't have Instagram.
Yeah, no, exactly. We didn't have a signature shoe. We didn't have a new. So I just hope he understands that he has the world in his hands. He's going to make a shitload of money on and off the court as long as he understands that this can all be taken away. I think for a moment he just thought he was invincible. And how can you not? You're one of the best young players in the world. You got endless money. You got endless resources. You never have anybody telling you no. You kind of think like you're unfuckwittable. And I think that he started to realize that it was bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. And then it culminated with him kind of telling on himself with a gun. So I just think he understands now
that, I mean, we hope
to pump my brakes a little bit. You know
what
I mean? Yeah,
because it's a long road. You know, when you think about a career, you said relatively 15 years to 17, to get that kind of a run, and especially on a level where he has the potential to go, you got to play the game.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, he's 23 and his contract next year kicks in, and it's 230 with incentives, $230 million. So at 24, he'll have a contract that runs until maybe he's 27. He has a chance to catch 2 more in our new collective bargaining agreement that is about to happen. These max players are about to be making $50 to $60 million a year. So he has a chance to catch 2 more $300+ million contracts in just basketball, not to mention what he can pull in off the court. So I just think he has to just
I would take a beat on that job. We love you, man.
Come on, man.
Let's get that.
We need you.
We need you. Like, he's so fun to watch.
He's one of the faces of young American-born players that are kind of doing their thing, because Europeans are holding it. You look at the last handful of MVPs, and you look at Luka on the way, and you see what Joker's been doing. You see what Embiid is and what Giannis is doing. Like, Americans have kind of been pushed out a little bit. You know, Steph and KD and Bron and all these guys, they're on their way out. So who is going to hold the crown, the torch for –
Three years from now, four years. Yeah.
And he's one of the players with his talent is undeniable. So I just think it's, sometimes it's decision making. You get caught in the moment. You had never have nobody telling you no. You feel like you got to bring the whole hood or all the homies with you everywhere you go. But it's like, when we talked about when it first happened, and I think maybe Deion Cole said this. I watched one of his comedies, like, you have friends that are meant for different levels. And each level you grow, you have to let go of a few people. And you're going to bring some people, but not everyone is meant to go, because you're going to the top.
Correct.
There's not a lot of space up there, to hang out. So you're going to take, and I'm the last person to tell you, because I've been in so much motherfucking trouble. Don't do this, don't do that. But I'm just saying,
But that's why I like having you, Matt, because you are honest about it. Like, you with the shits. Like, every time I turn on TMZ, you done did some shit. Yeah. Or you know some shit, or you was close to some shit.
My whole thing is just like, there's no skeletons in my closet, Bill. Like, all my shit is, I have political aspirations one day. You know what I mean? So if people think, I'm going to talk about the motherfucker, they've been talking about that. What I mean? Like, that was, so it's just like, to me is, okay, it only becomes a problem when you don't learn, And again, my stuff situation, it wasn't really me out here fucking around or doing dumb shit. It was just real shit was brought to my plate, and I don't do disrespect, whether I'm an athlete or I'm a man, I'm a father, I gotta look my kids in the eye, so I can't let some shit slide. So some shit I just reacted like I wasn't an athlete because it didn't matter to me at that time. No, I'm not playing this game. So I don't ever go looking for trouble. Sometimes it jumps on my front porch, and I got to kind of deal with it the best way I can in the moment. And I've made plenty of mistakes while doing that. But again, it comes from a genuine place and a pure place. And if anyone who knows me, they know I'm one of the most laid back, coolest, down to earth people you'll ever meet. But my reputation sometimes precedes me.
Yeah, but I think what you do that gives all that the sort of the levity that it needs is that you're very authentic, and you don't run away from, you don't have Twitter fingers, as they call them, or, cats that just pop shit, online. And this is one of the things that I realize that I'm an OG in this regard, is that one thing I don't like about social media is how if me and you got a beef about something, I'm going to say the beef on social media instead of calling you, and I got your phone. That shit is whack to me. Like, super. To me, it's super whack. Like, I'd rather people stop doing that, because a personal situation could be handled in 10 minutes, 5 minutes.
But then you add fuel to the fire and let everyone have
now
an opinion.
You got everybody, now their families and the different and the other around the way, they talking shit. Now this shit done turned into
I also just live by the rule, like, don't say nothing on social media you wouldn't say to somebody's face. Because I think, that screen, you feel a little bit more comfortable. Maybe you're in your mom's basement talking that extra shit, knowing, like, bro, you wouldn't say that to me if we were face-to-face. Like, so I always live by, like, I'll never say nothing on Instagram, on TV.
Right.
If it's an issue dealing with someone that I wouldn't say to your face.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Well, with the NBA, I have a question for you, because I don't know how they handle with everyone being immersed inside of social media. As an NBA, a present NBA player, do they kind of like want you guys to kind of fall back on the social media, or do they want it?
No, I mean, they encourage you to, everyone is a brand now, and that's shout out to David Stern. David Stern, when he took over in the early 80s, although it was a team sport, he promoted individuals, and I think that's why the game has continued to grow, because he did such a great job. So fast forward now, where you're literally, you're not a business, you're a business. Not a businessman, I'm a business. Like, so you represent yourself. So, I mean, they're all for you promoting yourself, but at the same time, they have a ton of people scouring the social media, every platform, every single day, looking for.
Right.
I used to get fined a lot for, saying like fuck and shit on Twitter. I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I'm grown as hell. Like, I can't say, you can't. You know what I mean? So it's just like, we have to move different, and it comes with money, it comes with recognition, it comes with fame, it comes with a lot of different things. But we just have to move different. So although I used to like this, like I'm as regular as can be, I'm the most regular NBA player, I still have to move different because I am an NBA player.
Right. And you still want to make sure that you keep yourself safe. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times, like when I back in the day, you know, me and Shaq would be hanging out or going somewhere, and he always had, you know, his self protected. Like he just like just in case,
you know.
And I understand, you know, one of my good friends, Mike Epps, had a situation a couple days or a couple weeks ago, and he was just being honest. He forgot, like, you know, he's like, look, I travel. You know, I have jewelry, I have, you know, money on me sometimes, and I just don't want to get caught slipping. Mm-hmm. So is there a way? I just think that if you need to have a firearm, I think you should just have, you know, security that's armed.
Then but at the same time,
do you think you need it, like, as well as a player, your own?
It just depends. I was someone who never moved around with a gun. Mm. Never, ever. And it's just because I try to, and not to say I haven't been in no sticky situations throughout my career, but I just try to move the right way. I show respect. I show love. I don't fuck with everyone, but I fuck with everybody. You know what I mean? And if it, you know, we keep it cordial, I'm gonna shake your hand, I'm gonna look you in the eye, I'm gonna keep it G. Short conversation or not, I'm gonna keep it moving. So I just really try to stay out of those situations. Some people like to be in those situations. So I feel like if you feel like you need it, it's good to have it. But then people are, well, why don't you just hire security? But it's just like, damn, around the clock, that's not cheap. Around the clock security, like I gotta run some, grab some milk real quick from the grocery store. Like, you call security, you look at Nip's situation. Damn, I'm running up to the shop real quick to go give the homies just got out. I'm gonna give them some, you know, lace them with some gear,
right?
And you run into something, you know what I mean? So it's just like it's such a hard gauge. Like, am I always moving around security? Do I carry my own gun when I go out? I'm gonna tell you know what I mean. So it's just like, to each his own. I never want to tell nobody what they should and shouldn't do, but it's just like I think every situation is different. So,
like, I'll give you a prime example. Like, I travel just like NBA players do. I go to the same cities. I do shows, mm-hmm. and I've been in Memphis, mm-hmm. and Memphis can get
rough.
Real. Yeah, like Memphis could go from 0 to 100 mm-hmm. real quick. Like, you could just be like having a good time, having some ribs at Rendezvous, and then 2 miles down here, it could just be like pop, 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 pop. And I've been there, and I've seen it happen.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, I'm gonna keep something with me.
Even here. You know what I mean? Yeah. We're in the capital right here. You know what I mean? The Bay. Every city has those things. But, you know, Bill, what I found out during my playing career is I just think that I kept it so real and authentic that every time, and this is, you know, knock on wood, because anybody can get it at any time. Like, people fuck with me just because how real I kept it. So whether I knew them or not, it was Bloods, Crips, Vice. It don't matter where I was, what city I played in Memphis. I used to be with Z-Bo in the hood, and they just always show love because it just, like I said, I tried to be genuine. I never tried to be more. I'm not the toughest motherfucker by any means. I'm just not with the bullshit.
Right. You know what I mean? What's wrong with that?
Yeah, plain and simple. You know what I mean? So I think
Shout out to Z-Bo real quick.
That's the homie. I mean, so I used to get so much love, but just because I just feel like I carry myself with morals. I carry myself with integrity, and I moved the right way, and even if I did that, son, you know, I could have ran into some bad luck. But luckily, I didn't. But there are guys that just move certain ways. But also, I think another thing is I was never into jewelry. Mm-hmm. I was never into the big chains. The homies went through the big chains, and that was never really me. To me, I'm always thinking it's not what's on you, it's within you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I was never really one that moved like that. So I didn't make myself a target by just having a bunch of stuff
being
on.
Guarded,
I tried to move the right way, and it, you know.
And it's so far so good.
It worked out okay for me.
Well, one of the other additions to your life that I think really, really, it feels like it just brought another sort of energy to you is being a father. Like, it's like, I feel like, dude, you got the daddy thing down there. Like, it's locked in. Like you make me proud. Like, I'm like, yo, I hope I come off like a dad, like Matt. Cause like you, I'm in it too. Right. I'm like, I'm full throttle 24/7, right. Never complain. Yeah. I'm with the shit mm-hmm. when it comes to my kids, man. It is the joy that I see on your face with your boys and your new kids. Uh-huh. It's just like, man, you got your own thing, man.
It's fun. I just think, you know, my dad was there, but he wasn't. My dad was out trying to provide. My dad and I, although I saw him every single day of my life, we didn't really have a relationship. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It was just, he was out there trying to provide. He was running the streets. He was working. He was doing different shit. So, you know, my dad and I didn't get close until my mom died when I was 27. And from there, till now. I'm 43 now. He's been absolutely amazing. Great relationship. Talk often. See each other. He's a great, great papa to all, you know, to my kids. But right. I always told myself, if I'm fortunate enough to be a father, that's it. I'm gonna be the best father I can be. You know what I mean? And I think obviously now, and again, something that was very public, you know my ex-wife well too. So we're going through a lot of bullshit when our shit stopped working, and you know, we went our different ways and there was a dust up and everything. But at the same time, I never lost focus of what's important.
The kids.
You know what I mean? And the kids are the most important. And granted, did I make some decisions, mistakes along the way? Absolutely. But at the same time, it was never intentional. If it ended up hurting them, it was never intentional. So I just feel like, you know, fatherhood is it. And I feel like there has been such a stigma on Black fathers in particular.
Absolutely.
That was, you know, like, fuck that. That's, whether it's true or not, that's, oh, that's not our generation, or that's not my group of homies. Like, we're all fathers before, like I told you before, like with the disrespect, like I'm a father before I'm a basketball player, father first. So I just never lost sight of that. I think being a father is amazing. You know, and shout out to my ex-wife, because she does her job as far as being a mother. You know right. what I mean? Because to me, we need both. And we've been able to work through our differences and understand, like, we got two young men. And even Derek in this situation now, like, we had a real, after we got in our little duster, we had a Woo! Conversation. And I told him, I'm like, bro, because I was still playing, I was like, to keep it G, like, you see my boys more than I do because I'm still playing. So I need you to discipline them. I need you to be a role model. I need you to kind of be the father figure in their life. And the boys loved D. And that was part of the reason why I squashed the shit, is because it wasn't really about... We were cool before, but it wasn't really about, oh, fuck this nigga for life. It was just like, no, like, I felt like you crossed the line. We discussed that, and now we're cool. But at the same time, now we got two young men to
raise. Now what we gonna do?
You helping me raise my son, so let's be the best we can at that. So,
can I have a funny moment?
Yeah, absolutely.
There is a joke, not a joke, but there's basically a myth that you drove 200 miles. Yeah. It was 150 miles in 42 minutes. Was it? Did you get down here fast? Because I thought I saw you go past me on a 1-on-1.
I think Kanye rapped about it and said something like 90 miles. And so the story was, we were in.
Everybody got a mythical story of how fast you got here.
We were in Santa Barbara the day of the shit happened. And I was playing for Memphis at the time. So we had training camp in Santa Barbara. So I told, and me and G were cool at the time. Like, yo, I'm going to, you know, I went to Memphis early. Mm-hmm. I came back like, yo, we have training camp out here. Can you bring the boys? I'd love to see them. So I got her a room at the hotel, and then the boys stayed with me. So they were there for 2 days. And then the coach gave us the Sunday off. So training camp ended Saturday. So I'm like, fuck, I'm going to go back to LA and chill for a day, hang out with the kids, check in with some of my homegirls. And you know what I mean? And before I have to go back to Memphis. So I'm driving with G back to, and the boys back to LA.
Okay.
So then
from
Santa Barbara. So I get dropped off, and then the shit happens later that night. Like, I was just with her and the boys, and then he ends up being at the house. I find out from the boys, and what happened. So I really drove. The funny part was, so I had both my cars in Memphis at the time, and I had one of my homies living with me. So the funny part was, this is before Uber. So I didn't know.
You didn't, like, have a ride?
Once I found out, I didn't know how the fuck I was going to get over there. But I was, if I had to walk, I was going to motherfucking walk from Marina Del Rey to Redondo Beach, but I was going to get there. So my homie is out of town, but he has the Bentley downstairs, and I'm flipping the house upside down trying to find the key, and he's not answering. I'm getting mad as fuck, kept calling. So he finally tells me where the keys are. And I looked, flipped the whole house up except that one spot. They were sitting right there. Went downstairs, get downstairs. The bitch is on a flat. And I'm like,
oh!
I can't fuck his car up.
I can't fuck his car, but you want to.
I got
to
get there. So, Bill, when I told you, I put the motherfucking hazards on and drove 2 blocks to the gas station.
Put some air in that,
like,
bitch.
4 or 5 miles an hour. Put some motherfucking air in the tire. And shot down to the South Bay. So I drove 15 minutes. The funniest part to me was that part was how I had to get, like, how was I going to get there?
You was going
to
maneuver enough.
I was going to get there. If I had to fly there, I was going to get there. Let me tell you
how ridiculous the story was. The story was that you drove from Sacramento, which is 5 hours.
300 miles.
They
That's
said,
crazy.
This is how bad stories get flipped.
Man, urban
they
legends.
Said, yo, the urban legend was Matt found out what he found out. He drove 300 miles from Sacramento to LA in 42 minutes. Nah. I'm like, yo, bro, it would have been helicopters following you at that point.
It was 10. It was 10 minutes,
see,
literally.
See how that's exaggerated. I wanted to hear that from you.
And maybe if I listened to like some R&B, if I had some Tony, but you know, my ass had some Tupac on, so there was no turning
there
back.
There was no. You know, I hit him up.
Yeah, for real. I hit Gilbert Arenas up like, bro, I'm about to go pull some shit. You might have to bail me out in a little while. So he was on standby. And
yeah, you had.
He went, you know, and we got to functioning.
I love it, man.
But to fast forward it now, like again,
now it's
like
good.
I said,
everything's cool.
I don't
cool.
like to, because I feel like, you know, I don't want to throw no disrespect that way because we're all on good terms. So like I said, like cool. that happened. He and I had a conversation of why it happened. I explained my side. He explained his side. We shook hands and we were cool after that. And then, like I said, that's where the fathering part came in. Like,
yeah, because
hey,
it's a bigger, playing. Higher
I'm,
purpose.
I'm still playing. Like, I need you to do. He's like, you know, I got you. I love the boys. It's like, yo, they love you too. That's part of the reason why I came to squash this shit. So it was a crazy situation that again, because you know, motherfuckers have died for much less.
Come on, man.
Much
when
less.
When it comes to the kids.
Much less. You know
zero,
what I mean?
So, zero tolerance.
You know, so we had our situation, we were able to get through it and now things are great. You know, she was even helping me coach, you know, for a little while till her schedule got too busy. We were just all in Vegas together, her and Derek and the boys and I, and you know, as we were playing in our championship this last week. And so things are good, but it,
how,
it
how
took
old are the boys
there.
Now?
Eighth grade, 14.
So they're 14. Yeah. And they're about what, 6'1, 6'2?
So they're about like 5'10, 5'. Like, so this is my, and I've been telling them, and they be getting gassed because their bodies are super sore. And I'm telling them, you guys are growing, but like one's in a 14, one's in a 13. Mm-hmm. I was like, I was your guys' height in eighth grade. And by the time I started my freshman year, I was 6'4. And by the time I got to my junior year, I was 6'8. So like,
take
the time
your
to start growing is it's on the way.
It's coming.
On the way. So they, because everyone had already passed them up. You know, most of the kids now are kind of holding back, so they're, you know, from 14 to 15 is a huge difference. You got hair everywhere, your voice is getting deeper, you're getting bigger, so right. They're, you know, they're actually their right grade and they're, right age.
See, I did it like yeah, that too with yeah. my son. I'm so like, I'm right not grade, I'm not yeah. holding back.
Nah.
My son's 16, 6'5. That's it. Yeah. That's his real
yeah.
age.
Yeah, so like I said, it's coming. So I've been telling, like, bro, I was literally both, you know, I was your guy's height when I was your age, and all of a sudden, and they already have, one of them has bigger feet than I had at that age too, so I, you know, they're about to start stretching out, but... Eighth grade, yeah, and then I got, you know, obviously Ash, who's 4 years old, but he loves hanging out with the twins, so he's 4-year-old with the 15-year-old vocabulary, which is not good.
Not good.
He's going around saying, nigga this, nigga that, and shut up, and I'm just like, oh, bro, you're about to get kicked out of preschool.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, you know... You know
Matt,
what,
Matt, can you come to the school, please?
Oh, man.
Jesus but Christ.
He's so good, he knows when to use it, which is crazy because he's only four. Like, the teacher, he's great. And, you know, except when people make him mad, we have to teach him to keep his hands to himself. And I'm like, you have to understand, he's the youngest of six, so he has to throw him at the crib.
Yeah,
you know,
he
ain't got
yeah,
no choice. He got to throw him.
He's a little scrappy.
So we got him, and then obviously, you know, having three bonus kids. You know, we have an 11-year-old daughter now who goes to school with the twins, and then a 10-year-old son and an 8-year-old son. So we, you know, we have six kids from 4 to 14.
So it's a modern family.
Oh, you know, it's the Black Bradys.
It's the Black.
I mean?
It's the Black Bradys.
And it's the new norm. You know what I mean? Like, just unfortunately, you know, till death do us part doesn't really work in our society no more. And I commend anyone who could stick it out and make it work because it's a lot of work. But, you know, unfortunately, our shit didn't work out. Hers didn't work out. So, you know, now we've been able to bring our families together. And that's still not easy, but you learn on the fly. You know, it was hard. One of the hardest transitions for me is I cuss a lot. So when, you know, we moved in together, like, I'll tell the twins, go get your fucking homework done. But they'll hug me right after that because they know it's just how I say it. But right. if I'm telling someone who's not around, oh, my God, he said fuck or he said right. this, you know what I mean? So I kind of had to find that line of them understanding, like, if I say shit, fuck or
right.
get the fuck upstairs or take a fucking shower. Like, I'm not mad at you. I just, that means just
That's
take a shower.
Daddy
yeah,
talk, though.
Yeah, just remove the cuss word and just do the other thing I said. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like finding
just
the balance.
Don't hear the
it.
Adjective.
Yeah.
Do the action.
Do the action. Do the action. So, you know, that was kind of what I struggled with early because, like I said, yeah. I'll cuss in there. Like, I have to cuss
that's
myself
hilarious.
So many times on ESPN because I'm just cuss, and that's kind of what it is.
But, do they do over? Do they say do over? Oh,
no,
beep
no,
it?
I can't. They let me. I slide with shit a lot because shit be slipping out on ESPN sometimes. They let me slide and I'll see a smile, but then I'll just like, oh, I gotta reel myself. I'm not on all the smoke right now.
All
right,
we're
I'm
not on all the smoke.
I'm on a Disney platform
you're,
right
yes,
now.
Yes, you're so talking. You're messing with the Mickey check right now.
Right.
I saw something just a few days ago with Dame Lillard. It happened to Dame Lillard because he scored so many points. They right after the game, they gave him a drug test.
What kind of random, right?
Yeah. What kind of tests are they getting? What are they looking for when they do that? I never heard of that.
I'm confused. I don't know because they don't test for cannabis no more. So I mean, I think maybe PEDs. I'm guessing
super hot jump shot pill,
like growth. Yeah, I was just saying, like, what? None of that shit is going to make you.
It's called super wet.
Right. None of that shit is going to get you 70.
I know.
Whatever he's taking, it's going to get you 70.
Because
if he's taking it, other people have taken it. They haven't dropped 70. So he's not new to this shit. So when they say the tests are random, they full of shit.
I'm like, yo. So if you score 50 tonight. You got to get a drug test.
Same thing happened to Donovan Mitchell. Remember Donovan Mitchell? Same thing. And then Dame, same thing.
So they don't want y'all scoring past 70. It's not.
Is it bad for business?
Yeah, it's bad for business. You guys start this shit, it'll never stop.
I just don't like when, just be real and be transparent. Like where it's not random, it's selective.
Right.
That's what it is. So.
So if I score 35 tonight, that might not be. That's a regular number.
Yes, I guess. But that's an average KD night. So he can't be tested every night.
So get this. So when Kobe went for 81.
Oh man, they probably try to draw his blood. They probably try to do everything with Kobe. Ain't no telling. I never asked him that. That was the last game of the season, so they couldn't do it anyway. But
right.
Yeah, I'm sure that if that was in the season, they would have. Oh, well, actually, 81. I'm thinking 60. No, I don't know about 81. I wonder if they did.
Yeah, because he was playing. Was they playing Toronto?
Toronto. I was thinking 60 on his way out, but yeah, 80. Probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
I didn't know they did that because he said it was. He said in his interview, he's like, "That's crazy. Like, why would they do that to me? Like, because I scored."
Oh, they did. He said they did.
Yeah, they did. That's what I was wondering. Like, what are they looking for? He had a smoothie that had some extra shit in it.
Nah, Kobe used to put that. Kobe was a motherfucker, man. Dope dude. I was so lucky to learn him off the court and go from, you know, just competitors. So I met Kobe in 98 when he came to Lakers in 96. But, you know, it's well documented that he didn't get along with the group at the time. So he was always on at UCLA, eating, hanging out, talking to people, working out, playing. So it was just kind of an admiration. Like, damn, this motherfucker's 2 years older than me and he's so much better. I ain't never going to the NBA. Like, what the fuck? This is what I, you know what I mean?
So he was a baby and he was cooking.
He set the bar, you know what I mean? So it was just always, he would sneak back in, or not sneak, he would come into Poly after we were done working out and I would sneak back just to kind of watch him work out and his work ethic and how hard he worked. And then lo and behold, I made the league. So it was just like, I remember watching him. So it was always like the bar, like, all right, I gotta guard Kobe. So it was always just such an amazing matchup. And even when I told you earlier, you were talking about hit jumpers. Like, nah, I didn't look at it that way. Like, I get to guard the, like, I used to get, because I was a football player, so I want to play some defense on a motherfucker. So I'm guarding Kobe and these guys. So, you know, when it kind of came to a culmination in Orlando in 2010, when I faked the ball in his face, and you know, after that game, it was right before the playoffs. They end up going to the finals. We lose in the Eastern Finals to Boston. I'm in Orlando. They go to the finals, beat Boston. Boston had beat them 2 years prior. He calls me that summer. And anybody who knows me, like, I don't ever pick up my phone. Even if I see the name, I might even pass on my dad calling me sometimes. So it's just like, I don't pick up my phone. And I just happened to pick up this number, and it was him. I was like, what up, it's Kobe. I'm like, yeah, fucking right. Who is he? He's like, nah. He starts laughing. He's like, and I heard his laugh. He's like, nah, it's me. It's me for real. I was like, oh, what's up, bro? How'd you get my number? Okay. Like, what's going on? Started talking. What are you doing this summer? It's like, oh, yeah, I'm still here in Florida chilling. I think I might go to Miami. Because I was talking to Pat Riley at the time, and that's when they were building the Big Three.
Right.
With Bron and them. So I'm thinking, all right, this Orlando situation is bullshit.
It's going to be sexy.
They're not really offering me what I think. Toronto had offered some good money, but they weren't winning at the time. Like, I wanted to win because we had just went to the Eastern Finals. Like, I got to win. So he's like, you want to be a Laker? I'm like, hell fucking yeah. Like, I grew up a Magic Johnson Showtime Laker. And like,
right.
And he's like, anyone crazy enough to fuck with me is crazy enough to play with me. I was like, shit, well, I fucked with you, so what's up? You know what I mean? And like, you know, 4 or 5 days later, literally I've flown out to LA and I signed the papers and I was a Laker. So we went from competitors to teammates and then to brothers instantly. Like, he was going through some stuff at the time in his life. I was going through some stuff at the time of my life. So we literally just bond, and then we'll go around. People tell stories now, like, damn, we never seen Kobe come out until you brought him. Like, you never seen. Jack tells a story one time, because my whole routine when we used to fly, I always used to fly with my tree. So Any hotel we go to, as soon as I get there, the team knows when I'm in the room. I'm chilling. we're in Milwaukee. Cove's like, "What you doing?" I was like, "Chilling." He's like, "What are you doing after you're done chilling?" I'm just like, "Shit." He's like, "Let's do something." I'm like, "We're in Milwaukee, bro." He's like, "I don't give a fuck." So I hit Stack Jack because he was in Milwaukee at the time. And lo and behold, I was like, "Cove wants to go out." He's like, "Quit fucking lying." He's like, "What are you doing? I'm about to come small." I was like, "Nah, Cove really wants to go out. Like, let's do something." He's like, "All right, if you're serious." And lo and behold, we pull up in a motherfucking Milwaukee club. But we just used to move around. He was the first person to ever take me to, like, the Oscar parties and the black tie parties and the events that my resume didn't measure up to get into. I used to fuck with Cove. Like,
Cove, can you help me get in here real quick?
It was dope because he had a little spot, so... He had a spot that was at the Ritz across the street. So it was like the Batcave. Like, we wouldn't even come up surface level. We went all the way underground from the Staples Center all the way up to his place, shot up there, changed, had a couple of drinks, got in the car, and then we hit the streets. And it was just like I, you know, got a chance to just get to know him.
That's
and
super really fuck fly, with him.
And
man.
From the jump, he, you know, the boys were like three or four when I first came to the Lakers. And it was Uncle Cole from the Rip. Like, the first time he saw him, like, he's like, "What sizes are you guys?" And I was like, "I don't know. Let me ask their mom." Got their sizes. Every time a shoe dropped, he sent it to the Twins. Every single time. Every time the Twins came in the locker room, they'd run to his ass for it. They'd run to me.
Right.
Like, it was like Uncle Cole. So just to get a chance to see that side of him. And then fast forward post-career where he's coaching Gigi. I'm coaching the Twins, and we're always at the same tournament. So he would hit me up like, "Yo, what time you play?" "We play at 9. "What time you play?" "We play at 11. "All right, we'll probably see you tomorrow." This motherfucker will come 2 hours early to watch some 7 or 8 year old kids play.
Oh, yeah, he was into it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy. Like, actually, it's funny. It just came up on memory. I want to show you. Literally just came and I saved
it. Wow.
I don't have it no more. It just came to my memory yesterday. Look.
Oh.
Watch. You don't see.
The boys are so little. He's right there.
Right there, bro.
No, even at 100. Right, I could tell you, I'm going to tell you a crazy Kobe story. True story. Kobe is fresh into the NBA. Just got here.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh went to the prom with Brandy. I'm on MTV. This is 96.
Hey, you were doing your thing back in the 90s.
Yeah, come
bro.
On, baby. Oh, come man. On. This is 96.
Come on,
I'm literally here at West Hollywood Park. We shooting Kobe, welcoming him as a Laker. They had Eddie Jones.
Mm-hmm.
They had Nick Van Exel. They had... Shaq, and didn't they have Sid Ceballos too?
Probably.
Right? Roughly in there. Yeah. Okay, cool. Speed the story up. So this is 1996. Kobe had just went to the prom with Brandy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm meeting him for the first time. We meet in West Hollywood at this little park, right? So I'm interviewing Kobe, whatever, and some dudes playing. So Kobe was like, "Yo, you want to play? Want to play for a few minutes?" I'm like, "Yeah, I always keep my shit with me, bro. Right. You ready to play, whatever. Put my sneakers on or whatever, right?" I swear to God, there was about 4 moves he did I never seen a basketball player do in my life. Like, I've never seen it before, bro.
He's
like,
he's 18 at the 17, 18, right?
He's 17.
Okay. Yep.
Bro, my man said, "Are you ready?" This is I never seen nobody say this. He said, "Yo, my man, you ready? You sure?"
I'm going to give you a chance to back out right now.
Bro. Literally, he did like in and out, cross, hezzy, up fake, and then took off line. I was just like, "You know what?"
Punched it.
Boom! I said, "Yo, man!" I called my dudes. This is true. This is one of my true stories. I called all my boys back in New York. I said, "Yo, man! I just seen the next Michael Jordan. Do you know nobody believe me?" I said, "Yo, man! I swear to God, I just played with this kid. He about 17. I ain't never seen no shit like this. He can fly. He stay in the air all day. And his jumper wet. He got handles. He got everything. And he's super athletic." They was like, "Yo, man, get the fuck out of here. Ain't nobody better than Mike."
It was
young Kobe Bryant. People could see it then.
And every time, the thing about Kobe, obviously he was, you know, God blessed him with tremendous God-giving talent, but I think he paid God back every day by how hard he worked on top of that.
Facts.
Worked his ass off, but we went. So he used to have a camp in Santa Barbara where Mike used to have his camp, but then Kobe kind of was doing his thing out there. So I remember I went out there one time to speak to the kids, and he's like, "You want to play 3-on-3? I'm like, "Bro, I smoked the whole way up here. I'm just talking to these fucking kids." Like, "Nah." He's like, "Nah, we about to play."
Oh, no.
I'm like, "All right, bro." When I tell you we played probably 12 and 13 year olds, Kobe was in game 7 of the finals mode, dunking on kids, blocking on kids, made a kid fall, getting hard. Like, not like, I'm thinking like, I'm just blown away. I'm sitting back laughing. Like, and
Kobe,
just,
man, ease just, up on these children, baby.
Kind of just moving around. But Kobe was, if he was playing basketball, he was playing basketball. It doesn't matter where, at the park. It didn't matter if it was at the camp.
It was
teenagers.
Throttle.
Like, he was all the way in. And that's just him.
Man, what a great story. Can we give a round of applause for Kobe Bryant?
Rest in peace to my dog.
R.I.P. Kobe Bryant. Matt, man, I think, man, where you are in your life right now is such a wonderful thing to see our brothers out here who really, really got their life together and really focused on what's important, man. You are inspirational, bro,
thank
and you.
You
are a black dad doing I'll call it black daddy magic.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get no props out here in these streets. You just no trophies for us.
Right.
But we out here.
Yeah.
To all the fathers out there that are, you know, loving raising their kids, to all the dads that really want to make the time and do make the time, man, we salute you.
Money don't take over time, either, man. Spend that time.
Time is the money with your kids, man. I'm really proud to have Matt on here. Before you get out of here, I got to get you with All Facts, bro.
Yeah.
All Facts. All Facts is a part of Top Billing when we ask our guests two great questions, and you just got to tell the truth, which I know you're going to do anyway. All right?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. If you could pick your favorite starting five, you being one of the five to get to play, and y'all get to play anybody, who would your five be, or your four that you're going to add to your squad?
Magic.
Boom.
Mike. Kobe.
Damn.
Shaq.
Oh.
And me.
Oh, that's it. You don't need nothing else.
No.
Y'all good.
Yeah. You're straight.
Okay. It's that we straight against the world.
Yeah.
It's, that's the t-shirt, us versus everybody.
The world, for real.
All right, here we go. Here we go. One more time. All right. All Facts, this is where we get an opportunity to ask our guest a question, and they have to give it to us. All Facts. Best weed you ever smoked, and with whom?
I mean, I'm lucky. I mean, shout out Seven Leaves. The company I'm with, we got some fire. I'm going to flip it on you a little bit. I just think the first time smoking with Snoop, you know, that's the one person everybody wants to smoke with.
I don't even smoke, and I want to smoke with Snoop.
And I remember he told me, he's like, damn, nephew, you don't smoke like an athlete. You smoke like a rapper. Because I was really, you know what I mean? I prepared.
Was you engaged?
I visualized like, yo, when I make it, the one motherfucker I'm going to smoke with is Snoop. So I had been practicing my whole life. Like, I was trying to make it to the league. So the one day I got my chance to shine, I showed up well. So now that's big bro now. So,
Wiz Khalifa said the same thing.
Yeah.
Wiz said when he was 12 years old, he was like, dog, when I get big, the biggest moment going to be for me to smoke with Snoop. And it happened, man. Dreams come true.
I got a story with Wiz, too. So I'm in... I'm in Amsterdam. This is when I was playing with the Clippers, and I was with some of my teammates. I leave them anonymous because they still play.
Okay.
So we're in a coffee shop getting it in. The one dude got so fucked up that they had to carry him out, and they had him holding him upside down and pouring water on his face. I guess that's what they do out there. He was so lit. So I'm just like,
you're trying to get some circulation
to the brain.
I don't
know what was going on. So next thing I know, like, we hear, and you know Amsterdam has waterways, so we hear someone banging that new Wiz, and I was a huge Wiz fan. I'm like, damn, someone's banging that shit, like, loud as a motherfucker. So I go outside, and it's Wiz coming down the waterway in a boat. Happens to be, and so we were at the, Green something, and our hotel is literally right next door. Like, the girls took our bags, and we went right to smoking. So Wiz gets off, docks right here, sees us, what up? He's like, oh, I was like, damn, where you staying? He's like, I'm right here. Motherfucker was staying next door to me in the same hotel. So me.
Look at God. Man, won't he do it?
So it was the first time I smoked. Me and four of my homies went up there, and we smoked with Wiz. And it was that was the one thing. Like, I always knew myself, so I wasn't dabbing. He was trying to get everyone to dab. And a couple of my homeboys bit the bullet and dabbed, and they were nuts. But we literally smoked the entire, like, until like 4 in the morning. They were bringing fans in our room. All kinds, like, it was like
it was an epic moment.
Wiz is a heavy, and he's my neighbor now too. We still haven't linked. He literally moved like four houses down from
now.
Me,
here's
so
the funny part. Like, now you know Wiz came and left us something. You have a cannabis cup, so he came here and left a Khalifa Kush. And so I know you got the Barnes house.
I'm gonna
storm.
Have to. I re-up tomorrow. Literally, it was supposed to be here today, but it's coming from Saks. So
don't come by.
So
you can't come by Top Billing. Then don't drop off Top Billing.
Next time I'm here, I'm just gonna bring you some. Even though you don't even have to interview me, I'm just gonna.
You just gonna drop some shit.
I'm gonna talk like,
throw it through the glass.
I gotta go pick the kids up. But here, Give this to the team. I got you. Seven leaves.
Yo, and I swear to God, man, he went right before you left, right? He was like, yo, B.O., I want you to have some. So I go right here, and I just went, kirk. I ain't even have to go here.
Oh, yeah. He's heavy on it.
It just, the aroma, I was like, oh, my God. I just literally, he's such a good dude,
great
man.
Great dude. Great energy.
I love where the cannabis community is at this point. I realize that, you know, the world is accepting it. Mm-hmm. It's still, you know, still kind of breaking through on certain places. But what I love most about the cannabis community, they really chill people.
Oh, super chill. Super chill. That's why people, like I said, when they would see me, they think they see me for 2 hours, like, oh, this dude's crazy. And then they'll see me after the game, and I'm chill. Like, that was just my job, man.
You in your zone, yeah, man. I'm not even chill. Playing right now.
I really feel like, you know, they're the part of the plant that can help everybody, you know, whether it be, you know, from the CBD side or the medical side for children and helping all the, you know, the childhood illnesses all the way to our grandparents. And I think we've been so brainwashed by, you know, Big Pharma. I think we have to, you know, I talk to people all the time that, man, we cut our medicine cabinet in half, or we throwing our medicine cabinet away and take edibles now, or we do this, or I'll smoke before I go to sleep, or this CBD cream.
This CBD cream is crazy.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, I agree with you. I think, you know, we still have more to go, but I just think it's more socially accepted now, and it's and people are starting to realize it's really beneficial for us.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first right here on Top Billing. We have Matt Barnes, the Mr. Original, Mr. Authentic, Mr. Real, and he got a chance to smoke with Wiz and Snoop, boy.
Man, lucky.
Listen, boy, you know God works in mysterious ways. Hey, we'll see you on the next one, only on Top Billing, baby. Peace.
Milk is chilling, this is chilling. What more can I say?